Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, it's time to reload this week's news. The week that was, what was the biggest story? Overreported, underreported? Winners, losers, what sucked you down the rabbit hole? And what story will we remember from this week in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years from now? In studio, I enjoy this. It is a producer's panel and a public media juggernaut. Hunter Klaus in the building. Nice to see you, Hunter. How are you?
Likewise. Good.
He's a producer for WTTW Chicago Tonight. A great show, and I appreciate you being here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Worked at the Sun-Times, and we worked together over at WBEZ. And Carrie Shepard. Carrie Shepard is the senior producer at WBEZ,
yes.
The NPR affiliate here in Chicago. Good to see you, too.
We're all WBEZ alums.
That's right.
I'm actually still there. Not an alum.
It's a producer's panel.
Exactly.
That's what we like. The insiders. Okay.
I actually sent your old desk, Justin. That's no lie.
Well, I feel bad for you. There's very little sunlight, and there's a lot of gum underneath the desk, so I apologize. Yeah. All right, so let's get to it. Let's get right to it. Why don't we start with you, Carrie? What was the biggest story of the week?
We were just talking before, and it's pretty hard to not point to gun violence shooting, especially when, I don't know if you guys saw the segment on BBC this week, if you watched it. And, you know, thinking about that, I think locally as journalists, like there's all these, I mean, Chicago Tribune's doing a great job. I think we struggle with the day-to-day of it. Like, where do we jump in? Where do we pull back? And then when we see national, international outlets like BBC come in, it's like, yeah, of course. But watching it, I thought, yeah, of course I know all this, but it's still awful. It still gets me to the
especially
core.
Especially when it's in that form, in that documentary form.
Right. It still is like, it's this just different format of like, you read the numbers, Tribune's been doing great reporting. And even though you kind of know it, it's still awful.
Well, the Labor Day weekend, I mean, that would start this week. And obviously Labor Day brought the holiday weekend was the biggest of the year so far when it comes to violence, both shootings and homicides or shooting gun victims. You see the numbers continue to go up and up and up. And we had Philip Jackson on the program earlier this week. We talked about what's at the core. And you just want to see more and more attention given to that. What is happening here? And the BBC, I mean, they came in, they did a documentary, check it out. You can just Google BBC Chicago and it'll probably pop up. But that was a real big thing.
Yeah, one of the things that like really popped out about the BBC documentary is they're interviewing this guy who's like an aspiring rapper in his car, and the camera pans down to his lap and he's got a gun on his lap in the car.
And he pulls up and to his friend and his friend just pulls out the gun. What do you mean, quick follow-up, Justin. What do you mean we don't cover, you wish there was more attention? Do you feel like
solutions instead
of just the numbers, the problems were violent? Okay.
To me, that's what we were talking about this week with Philip Jackson was just, you know, what can be done to really have a war on violence in Chicago? I mean, obviously the police are one aspect and they're doing everything they possibly can. They continue to. But it's more than that, and that's what we were getting at. Like, it's more than the police. And Philip was talking about it's the community. It's the
which is
parental.
What Superintendant Johnson was saying.
Yeah, I was going to say like that was like one of like, you know, one of the things that he said that really resonated. You kept seeing that quote pop up randomly at like different press conferences that were like completely unrelated, and it seemed really genuine when he said it too. It didn't seem like it was like this canned response.
Right.
Like usually, after these weekends, you'd hear something like McCarthy would always blame the gun laws, that we have to go after the gun laws and strengthen those.
Trafficking from Indiana,
exactly.
Yeah, and you get the feeling, I mean, I wonder, you know, maybe it's a different tact for the police department because that was something that they pushed and they pushed and they pushed the idea of not only like trafficking laws, but the idea of how many years you're going to get if you get caught with a gun on you, you know, and how easy it was to sort of turnkey gang members in and out of the jail. One thing that I thought was really, really interesting, and this is what Philip Jackson talked about, and I hadn't heard this before, and I fact check in the moment in the interview, but he had said that one of the issues the police have identified through, have been using data. They've been using a lot of, you know, data that they've collected to identify that there's 12 to 1,400 gang members and shooters that are doing all of this violence.
Yeah.
How do you figure that out?
I'm sure I don't know what it is.
It's called the strategic subject list.
Okay.
It's like some sort of algorithm that they use to identify people who are most likely going to be shot. And there's some debate over whether those numbers are actually accurate.
Sure.
Right.
But I was reading Greg Hines had this column this week at Crane Chicago Business where he talks about ROM and ROM's response to crime. And in there, he says that the police department has only visited these people on this list like 17, like altogether it was like 1,700. So if there's 1,400 people on the list, that means that police have only really visited them.
Well,
like once.
That's what Phillip's point was. He said, you know, if you know where they live and you know who they are and you know everything about them, why are they still there? Which is difficult. You're talking about 1,500 people. But the bigger issue, and this is the one that I never thought about, is that both weekends, holiday weekends, and there was a 4th of July and Labor Day, the police touted that before the weekend started, they did raids. They came up, I think, in the 4th of July, they got 177 gang members. I think right before Labor Day was 77, 80 or something on the Friday before.
Sort of a preemptive, yeah.
Right, but what Phillip Jackson said is that that causes instability because not unlike, and he I think he said this, not unlike sports or anything else, that there is a position to be filled on that corner. And that now it becomes competitive, and that's why the numbers go up, because people are, gang members are shooting at each other to claim the turf that was taken because the police cleared the area.
So what did he say was the solution?
Well, he had a lot of different thoughts on, you know, what to do. But I just thought that was, I never thought about that, the idea that when you do sweep, that it doesn't go away. People are fighting for that corner because it's a lucrative corner in a legal drug trade, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Did you did he talk about the idea of bringing in the National Guard?
No,
and Governor Rauner rejecting
that.
You didn't talk about that.
But I mean, that's something that we keep hearing over and over.
Yeah, I read in the Reader, there was a column in the Reader this week that's not the approach to take, you know, that the National Guard is really, and this is a very simplistic way to say it, but, you know, they come in during natural disasters, they come in during, you know, hurricanes, flood relief, and this is not the situation in which to discharge them, because I don't think they would know what to do. It just, and what
it's
would the police
do? It's kind of hard to see
the
National Guard doing, like, street policing.
Right, which, you know, we saw when, you know, back in the 60s, right, you know, like, but I think that, and I think that that got kind of washed away anyway. I don't think anyone was really fighting too hard for him to push that.
I had Chicago Violence is also what story sucked you down the rabbit hole because, you know, of that BBC documentary, there are points, and we'll wait till we get to that talk to talk a little bit about some of the things I didn't understand about the story that was revealed to me. And as I kept going down, I was like reading comments and reading different things where I'm like, oh geez, I had no idea that was happening. So we'll talk about that. But the other thing I had for biggest story of the week was the water sewer tax debate in city council. One, that it passed quickly, but the concept being that Rahm Emanuel and his budget office has created a tax on water and sewer to pay for the municipal pension fund to fund it. Mm-hmm. But aldermen have pointed out, and critics have pointed out, that after, 5, 6 years, that there's the money isn't there anymore, meaning they ran out of money. And this is supposed to be a 40-year plan. So here we go again with this strange math and the immediacy of the short term and kicking the can down the road. I thought that was not necessarily about to tax the what you're going to see on your water bill, but how we choose to govern in the city.
Well, and it was also like the mayor's office gave more figures and more information to aldermen like just a day or two before the finance committee hearing that was yesterday, which was the first hurdle for this tax to go through. And you're right. Like they found out that it wasn't enough money and it's supposed to be a 40-year plan. And the plan runs out of money in like the 6th year. You know, another thing that I thought was really interesting about that. So during the committee hearing, Kerry Austin, who is the chairman of the committee, or not the finance committee, but she was there. She was talking a lot about what this means for laundromats. And as it turns out, there was like a guy from this association. It's called the African American Laundromat or Laundry Association. I had no idea that there was an African American Laundry Association.
I didn't think about that connection either. All the articles talked about laundromats being at an unfair disadvantage here because they're going to be taxed way more than everybody else because they use so much water. And they're mostly for, you know, communities that don't have laundry.
Right. But our church is exempt. It's that same thing? Because we saw this a few years ago, too. And that was a big uproar.
I mean, I don't know if it has. I don't know where the exemption stuff is at. But for the water tax, I thought that was interesting that was the angle that some aldermen came at the city with that they didn't think about was the laundromat. So, interesting story. Okay, we'll
probably
take a break.
Because most of them don't go to laundry.
Right, they're like, laundromats? 312-981-7200 if you want to get into the convo. We'll come back. We'll do overreported, underreported, winners, losers, and keep the conversation going. Kerry Shepherd, Hunter Klaus with me. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. It's the week that was Reloaded. Carrie Shepherd, Hunter Klaus in studio with me. Let's go to Diane. Diane, you wanted to chime in on the story of the week. We said it was Chicago violence. You agree?
Yes, the story of the week is always Chicago violence, and it has been pretty much for the last 25 years.
Ain't that the truth?
Although it's not always bad. It's not always as bad as this weekend and other weekends we've had. However, I've been poor. Have any of you guys been poor? When there's no job, when your folks don't have jobs, how do the bills get paid?
Right.
When there is no place for you to go and the public schools no longer have vocational or technical instruction, what do? We don't even have Washburn Trade School because they didn't like the idea of liability in case somebody got hurt learning how to use power tools.
Right.
So where does the financial, the economic underclass have to go? Not everybody turns to violence.
Right.
I grew up where everyone was poor, and only two or three people became criminals. But nowadays, criminality is glorified way beyond how the mafia and Capone were glorified when I was a kid.
Yeah, you're right, Diane. Thanks for that. That's a good point. I mean, we talked about that with Philip Jackson, that he thought that the root cause was not the root cause is all about despair.
Yeah.
He said it was around despair. So I think everything Diane said is agreed upon.
It's interesting that Diane brought up trade schools and vocational schools. I can't for the life of me remember with whom, but I was just talking to somebody about that this week about, you know, how that is not everybody has a 2-year community college to a 4-year university. I mean, of course, we're not naive. That's not everybody's path. But the difference that like making more trade schools and viable options and vocational schools could probably make a difference.
Well, I mean, the old school trade schools here in Chicago at CPS are long gone. But the mayor has and CPS has said that they're going to bring back vocational schools in different forms, meaning for technology. You see that showing up where different forms. All right, let's keep moving here. Why don't we get to overreported and underreported? Hunter, what do you got for overreported?
Okay, overreported, I put Pokemon Go because every time I think it's gone, it always pops up. With the news of the new Apple Watch, like people are like, oh, Pokemon Go's back. It's going to be so much more fun to play on my watch. And I'm tired of it. I did play Pokemon Go when it first came out, and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun on the bus.
Because you're a video game guy, right?
Yeah,
I'm a
video game guy, yeah.
But I could tell by your hair, man. You got cool hair. You got cool glasses. You're a video game guy.
No, I'm basing it on knowing Hunter. Not just
I'm a video game guy as well. It's a 2011 Madden for Wii. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, throw it out there. All right, what do you got for overreported?
Quite frankly, I wrote anything in the Prez race. I'm not sure when I wrote that, what time of day it was. It may have been when I looked over and saw the TV with Trump on there. You know, my colleague Tony Arnold and I were talking about this week. It's just kind of a lull time in politics. And we know that and doing, you
locally,
know.
Locally, at least. Yeah.
Locally, for sure, and doing the job. But even the national race, I think we're just regurgitating everything. I mean, I feel like I've been hearing about Trump's plea to the African-American community for like 2 weeks now, right?
It's pretty amazing to me. I mean, this week you think about it used to be the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't be more literal at this point because I was going back and going through just the shows to see for this segment. Every single there is a Trump or Clinton controversy has erupted every single day this week, whether it be Trump University and the conflict of interest with the attorney generals, whether it be Colin Powell and the Hillary Clinton emails.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it goes down. I mean, it's unreal to the idea that there is so much like just frenzied action over strange controversy every single day.
It's not, I know this is not revelatory to many, but they're just feeding this bad beast too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's just becoming white noise for so many of us. And I was thinking about what Trump was saying about, you know, that awful offensive statement about what do you have to lose? You're in despair, you're in poverty. And like, he has nobody says like, what did you base that on? Actually, you know, it's 25%, 75% of African-American communities are not, you know, something like that. And we're just letting him do it. And it's the same.
I mean, that's really what this has come down to, isn't it?
Of course, we just let
him do it. He says whatever he wants all the time. The one I had for what was underreported was Trump's assertion that he would have prevented 9/11. He said that in a speech that he's like, if it were me, there wouldn't have been a 9/11. That's what he said. And the audacity to say that when he wasn't political, when he could have been, right? In 2001, he was a real estate mogul. But and the concept of the person that he's running against, not only being the senator in New York State at the time,
but
also the person who eventually went and got Osama bin Laden as a Secretary of State. You know, I mean, there's that weird kind of thing where you're like, huh, what, maybe you wouldn't bring that up since the person you're going up against actually has something to say about those things.
I just don't know how they're going to do the presidential debates. Like, I mean, like you said, he's someone who kind of defies the rules, and debates have all of these rules attached to them.
Good
and
point.
How do you
good point.
How do you kind of wrangle that in a little bit?
It's also, this is very cynical.
It's so true.
But this is, I mean, it's off. I was thinking this week of how interesting it is that, you know, politicians always have to do the ploy to get a certain type of running mate to, you know, go for whatever community that they're not getting. The Republican Party is at such a crossroads and odds right now that he had to get a super conservative running mate just to bring, just to say, like, hey, I'm here for you all. And it's like,
who? And then to this week was the first time we've heard from Mike Pence in a while.
Yeah,
and
what we haven't heard from him
what
for
he
a while.
Said is he's like, he likened Donald Trump to Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his contribution to this conversation, to the American conversation about this election has been, is saying, oh, Donald Trump is a lot like Ronald Reagan. And I mean, if I were a conservative Republican, I'd be cringing saying that's not that that's someone I look up to. And this is a different candidate who's nothing like Ronald Reagan. Hunter Klaus, Carrie Shepard in studio. We're going to take a quick break and an update on tonight's news from Rob Martyr. We'll come back. We'll continue overreported and underreported and get to winners and losers as well. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's the week that was. We're reloading Chicago's news. Cardinals fan walks by right when you're doing that little trip up here. Loves it. We're reloading this week's news with Hunter Klaus. He's a producer of Chicago Tonight, WTTW. Carrie Shepard is a senior producer over at WBEZ, the NPR affiliate here in Chicago. Talking about the biggest story of the week, what was overreported, underreported, just glossing over the overreported and underreported. I had Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling for anthem is overreported. I'm done with it.
But
they don't even show that part on the games.
Are we in second week of that also?
We're in third week. I think we might be in a month.
I think we're going a year of this.
There's a lot of talk. I mean, what gets me is the idea that, you know, there have been a lot of, you know, it was all preseason stuff. So it's almost like it wasn't okay, but it like that needs to not bubble over to the regular season.
Sure.
The regular season starts this week on Sunday. Last night, a Denver Bronco kneeled and he lost his highly coveted sponsorship for the credit union in Denver.
Right.
Yeah. And the the Seattle Seahawks have hinted at the idea that they're going to do something as a team on Sunday. But
then the critics
are like, how dare you on the anniversary of 9/11? It's just, all right, everybody calm down. You know, there's a place for protests. There's a place for protesting protests. There's all that stuff.
Oh, and
but it doesn't need to be number one.
Don't protest at the game. Or
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with it.
It's
I'm
not
just
news
saying
anymore. Yeah.
It's just, oh my, it's becoming like the number one story that just people seem to love to talk about. CNN's got the scrawl going. No good. I'm done with that.
That's one of those stories as talk show producers that you're like, how can we make this interesting tomorrow?
People want it.
That hasn't been said.
It's just everything right now. I mean, it kind of dovetails in what we want to talk about with winners and losers as well. Why don't we get to winners and losers? Hunter, who do you got for winners?
I put Jeannie Gang. She is the architect of Vista Tower, which once built will be the third tallest building in Chicago. It will be the tallest building designed by a female architect.
Mm.
So a little hometown pride.
Yeah.
She said in the, I think it was in DNA, she's a little proud. That's the way the phrase was.
She's a little proud
of being of that accomplishment.
Right.
That's what
right.
she said. Yeah, I agree. And really becoming the architect of Chicago's of note in Chicago. I mean, with mm-hmm. Aqua and Vista.
Oh my gosh,
I mean,
nationally,
yeah.
internationally.
Yeah, so
she's
definitely picking up the mantle of some great.
She won the MacArthur a few years ago.
Yeah, great architects here in town, and she's becoming the go-to. What do you got for winner, Carrie?
Whew. I don't really have any. You know, I'm looking at my notes here.
It's a cynical week.
I wrote split on this one because we were just talking about over-reported Rhymefest, and he's amazing. He's great. He uses his platform in such a good way. I thought, so I feel like that's a win a little bit. Maybe the media's oversaturation of it is a little bit of the lose part of it.
This is Rhymefest.
Oh, yes.
Being mugged. In his car.
And videotaping
going to
his
the police, having
with
trouble
police.
With the police. The police apologizing.
Mm-hmm. But a amazing. Thing that we said, you know, we were like, how many people would get that apology? And, you know, we understand
that's why he's getting it,
you know. But right. So I was a little split on that one. And I had a real feel-good, touchy one for winner.
What do you got?
That Florida State football player who sat with the little boy at school who eats lunch alone. Sometimes like those stories are just clickbait and you're like, get it off my feet. But mm-hmm. I thought that was actually very nice and lovely. That was a very good message.
For winners, I had, it pains me to say, but I do have to give Donald Trump being a winner because the man was down 10 points 3 weeks ago. And the polls that all came out after Labor Day, which is the official start of the campaign, has him within 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, but all
and
those
that's crazy.
Polls,
doesn't
go,
matter. I mean, they had him for dead after the stuff, after the conventions where he disrespected the family.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, this is over. They're like, we were in this studio talking about, but he has till September 9th to drop out. And who's going to replace him? The conversation was there. For him to be where he's at and continually trip over words and say things like he says, to be only 2 to 3 points down. I don't know if that's a win for him or a loss for Hillary Clinton, but the point being that it shouldn't be this close.
Or is it a win-loss for the American voter?
Yeah, right?
That's
well,
the big
we'll
question.
All right, let's go to losers. Losers might be a little easier this week. The one winner I will say is Chicago Comedy. Today it was announced Chris Redd, who was a Second City alum. There was a little confusion during the day if he was or was not a new cast member of SNL, but it is confirmed now.
Oh, nice.
He's going to be a new cast
awesome.
Member. He had a breakout role in the Andy Samberg movie Popstar. He played the Tyler the Creator parody in that.
Okay.
And that was really the takeaway from that movie. And he got a lot of great reviews, so it's good to see a kid from Chicago
get
a chance.
Yeah, that's definitely. Always fun, I think. Yeah.
All right, so losers. What do you got for losers?
I put law-abiding hobos because the hobo super gang is going on trial. I believe arguments start next week. But if you're not familiar, the hobo super gang is this like conglomerate of like the Gangster Disciples, the Black Disciples, and a few other gangs.
Was this the group that they raided that was planning to shoot up the police?
I think so. I can't. They did a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like I think they were trying to like rob an NBA player. They were all over the place. They they're on trial for 9 murders and racketeering. And one of the people that they're on trial for murdering was an FBI informant who was going to testify against them. But because he had given a videotaped grand jury testimony, the prosecutor is going to use his testimony from beyond the grave for the trial of his own death against these people.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Yeah.
Is that unprecedented?
Nuts.
I mean,
reporting this? Reporting this?
John Seidel from the Chicago
nice.
Sun-Times.
Yeah,
he's been doing a great job.
That's
of
amazing.
It.
Wow, that's
yeah,
that's
it's nuts.
That is nuts.
You think of hobos as like these adorable like derelicts with a handkerchief right. tied to a stick and catching.
I just got back from
jumping the train, jumping the rails.
I got back from L.A. and we did the tourism thing in Venice Beach and Santa Monica Pier. And the guys down there, the hobos, they're getting cutesy. They got like all these Trump jokes, you know, for a dollar
really?
And that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, all right, enough.
Were any of them good? Yeah. Any of the jokes?
It was like, I will kidnap Donald Trump for you for a dollar or something like that. Like that was the joke. They put it on a card. They wrote it on a cardboard thing. And my son turned to me and he was like, Dad, did you see that? And I'm like, come on, don't feed the fish. Keep moving. All right. So
don't poke the bear.
What do you got for losers, Gary?
Well, we were talking about this a little. This is kind of a combo. I had a little trouble with some of our more well-known Chicago columnists this week that I think sounded pretty tone-deaf on some very, very serious issues. And the bigger part of that, too, is that the disgusting stuff that comes out in the comments section that is not new. We understand this, but that reveals like a whole nother side.
You're talking about John Cass and John Cass's column about the feral boys.
Yeah, that was one for sure. There was one
which got national attention.
There was one from John McCarron about bike lanes in Evanston, and you know, he had a really good point in the middle that I think got lost, which is like, we need to do better planning for public transportation. I know that well. That's all I take is public transportation, talking about bus lanes and stuff. But he just sort of railed against bikers, and that feels tone deaf because we've lost, you know, what's our fatality right now, like 4 this year, you know, and it just, that felt a little hard for me. And then just the continued, people continually writing about, we left Chicago because one person got shot in our neighborhood. You know, I feel like that could have been me. Well, there's people that wake up every day and say, that's going to be me. You know, I feel like that sounds, when you have such a platform, that sounds a little tone deaf.
So a tough week for Chicago columnists, including Rob Feeder, who was let go from his contract expired at Tronc at the Tribune, which a big piece today with Mike Miner about just the idea. And it was a great little piece about Rob's longevity in this business from 1982 or something.
35 years, right?
To jump from place to place, which is amazing, covering media in this town. But also the idea that, you know, this is the cost of covering media in Chicago, unfortunately, is that the moguls jump from place to place as well. So Michael Farrell was at the Sun-Times, and Robert Feeder took him to task on what happened over there. He comes over to the Tribune. He changes the name. Robert Feeder does his job and reports the and lo and behold, we're not gonna have you here anymore. And I think that says a lot about how you independently cover the media when the media, you know, is all, when there's not a lot of options to get paid if you're a columnist.
That's so do you have him as a winner? What do you have him as?
I have Rob Feeder as a winner,
because
the one thing that I thought was amazing in Miner's column was that he had increased his traffic, his page views, coming over to the Tribune tenfold. And he lost half of that audience because he went behind the paywall. And now he's not done. He's going to continue to be independent until he'll find another deal to find a way to monetize his work. But those people can come back. So you're talking about 1 million page views, a lot of people who weren't able to get his stuff. So I would say Robert Feeder readers are the winners in this scenario.
Yeah, the top comment I read when I saw this story was, we'll go wherever, we'll follow you anywhere. and I thought that speaks very well.
It does. It says a lot about media.
Yeah,
we all know. Hunter Klaus, Carrie Shepard. We are reviewing the week that was. 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We'll continue. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're doing the week that was, reloading the week that was, with Hunter Klaus and Carrie Shepard, both in studio, talking about the winners and losers right now. The one winners we haven't said is the Chicago Cubs. They are once again
and
having
fans.
A tremendous...
Yep, yeah,
and they are 8 games, magic number 8 games to clinch the division. And there's a good chance that they're going to do that in St. Louis next week, which is even better.
It's hard to deny how much that revs up the city, like during Stanley Cup as well. Like everybody, you know, it is hard not, even if you don't care about sports, you know, it's hard to not get excited.
You just wonder. It's like everyone I say that, hey, Cubs are winning. I was talking to somebody, I'm like, the Cubs are probably going to go to the World Series. They're like, this city's going to explode.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, all right, so there's that part of it too.
I feel like this country might. Yeah.
All right, so one of the losers I had was the NFL, the National Football League. Last night, the Denver Broncos and Carolina Panthers played a Super Bowl rematch to kick off the season. All the hype, all the excitement of the football season coming back. And one of the problems with the NFL has been the fact that they have had a hard time with concussions, with head injuries, with covering up head injuries for past players, not paying union, all the kind of thing where it's just like there is a now a connection, a science connection that playing football and you know, CTE, it can cause brain damage and ultimately death for a lot of these players. So the NFL said a couple of years ago, 1-2 years ago, said, you know, no, we're going to take care of it. We're going to get really disciplined when it comes to helmet contact. You can't hit somebody in the head in this league anymore. We're going to flag you. We're going to take care of it. If somebody does get hit in the head and they try to play through a concussion, they can't because we have doctors on site and a protocol in place, right? Okay, we got all that?
Yes.
Last night, Cam Newton, who is the star quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, was hit, I think it was 6 times, helmet to helmet. And
never called.
No flags. There was one or two that was a flag, but it was offsetting in the rules. And it came out, and I read this in Deadspin, and I believe it, and I don't know if it's as much hearsay or whatever, that the Denver Broncos have figured out, and defenses have figured out, a way around an advantage when it comes to concussion play. Essentially, they will go head-to-head helmet and lose to 15 yards to force the quarterback to go out of the game to do the concussion protocol.
Ugh.
So, yeah, that's exactly why they're losers, in the way that you're like, you have created a system that they're gaming. That yeah. These players, and they'll, you know, they'll deny it. The Broncos will deny, we're not going after anybody's head, blah, 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 just the way the game is so fast. But it was pretty obvious last night that there was some headhunting going on.
Right? Yeah, I mean, like, I should preface this by saying, like, I'm not a huge football fan. You can ask me anything about RuPaul's Drag Race, and I can answer all those questions.
Another important sport.
What I don't understand about the thing with concussions with football is, like, how... It is such a physical game. How do you try to remove?
They say they can. And that's I think, the point, is that the NFL says they can. They never go there because they know that that's a losing proposition to say, hey, it's physical. Deal with it. They feel like they can control players. They can train players to hit in the body, not in the head. It's really about, there was an old thing in football where you would lead with the crown of your helmet. And that's the stuff that, you know, if you're coming at somebody, you know, running at 15 miles per hour and you launch yourself by the helmet into somebody else's helmet, that you get a concussion.
I mean, it's like the sad, sick joke that you've been hearing of, like, wait, we're surprised athletes, especially football players, are, you know, there's a lot of domestic violence and, you know, because their job is to be violent.
And suicides and other things around that because of what might have happened.
It has to trigger a lot of, a lot.
So last night, the NFL has really been on the hot seat to make sure they talked all summer long about new protocols and going to make it happen. And the first test in front of, you know, the kickoff to the league, the Thursday night game, and you not only see a team that is headhunting and going helmet to helmet several times in the game, but you see a concussion protocol where five, six times he was hit in the head. He was never taken off the field because he's a star, and you lose money if Cam Newton comes out of the game and Derek Anderson comes in.
Are the hardcore fans going to leave, though?
I don't know if they will. They make so much money. I'm sure they can deal with people leaving. But I think it's just a bad. It just makes the league look bad that they put all this lip service into fixing it in the first game out on the big stage, and it is painfully obvious that they have not. So all right. So any other winners and losers, and then we'll take a break for
one winner I put down were CPS students. The district released all of these numbers and. The graduation rate, they say, is at a historic high. 73.5% of students are on track to earn a diploma. And it's great because, you know, the students are doing well. And they're doing it despite all the craziness surrounding the district right now with the teachers union, CPS, uncertainty about, I mean, this school year
strikes,
began. And we didn't know if it was going to open on time a couple months ago.
Right.
So it's just nice to know that the kids are doing all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's go to Kathy. Kathy's got an underreported before we move on. Kathy, what do you got for underreported?
Oh, I thought that the for-profit school, ITT, I think it's a winner for the residents of Illinois area, or actually throughout the country, because ITT is being closed down. And I think that more of the for-profit schools, people who get loans through the government, veterans go into the service, come out thinking that they're going to be able to go to college, and the Veterans Administration pays for that, and then those people don't really graduate with any meaningful degree.
That's a great one.
That's good. Thanks, Kathy. That is a good one.
I also wanted to say hi to Carrie Shepherd. I'm from Rockford.
Hi.
Also, you were talking about the architect gang.
She's from Belvedere. Yes, I know. That's where my sister-in-law's from. Well, you and I will talk later. We'll talk later.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, there you go. 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get tonight's news with Rob Martyr, and then we will do what story sucked you down the rabbit hole and what story will we remember in 50, 100, 500 years from now. Carrie Shepherd and Hunter Klaus in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, David Nagler is going to join us. He's a musician, and he has taken Carl Sandburg poems, put them to music. He's going to perform live in studio, getting a lot of good buzz for this project that he's working on. He's a musician who's worked with John Wesley Harding, the Mekons, also his band as well. So we'll talk with David coming up here at 9 o'clock. Right now, we're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. You got an idea for what was the overreported, underreported, the winners, the losers. Right now, we're on the category, what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week? Why don't we start with you, Hunter? What do you got?
I put the Matt Lauer Candidates Forum thing only because as a producer, I kept wondering like what exactly went wrong behind the scenes. Was it like a Was he just surrounded by bad producers who weren't giving him good information?
Now, explain the story to me, because this is one of those that I saw the headline all over the place. And the headline pretty much sums it up. People angry with Matt Lauer because he didn't push Trump enough.
Well, it was that and that he was really strong on Clinton. He spent like a third of his time with Clinton talking about the emails. And I think for a lot of people who saw that, it reaffirmed what they already kind of suspect about how the media is treated this election, that they go really strong on Clinton, but some people feel like Trump is getting a free pass because, you know, it's Trump and he's a reality
TV
star. And
if you have different political leanings, it's the exact opposite.
Exactly.
And also that he sort of satirizes himself with what he said. You know what I mean? Like they're dissecting her policies and what, you know.
But he said stuff that was just like factually incorrect. Like, I think the more egregious thing that he said was that he was against the war in Iraq from the beginning, which is shown to be not true.
Right.
BuzzFeed had that recording from the Howard Stern show from before the war, and Trump was like very supportive of going to war.
Why was Lauer doing a candidate for?
Well, he did. It was the commander in chief form, and I guess he's the big star at NBC for that kind of stuff.
Well, allegedly that's not his.
Yeah. Allegedly, there were like a couple of people they were thinking about. I think one was like Andrea Mitchell, Chuck Todd, Rachel Maddow was also
all
a name that they were thinking.
All three of which make much more sense considering what they report on.
I wonder if it's just like a hierarchy. Like Lauer's like, I'm the top dog. I'm the Seacrest here. Carrie, what do you got for a story that sucked you down the rabbit hole?
I don't have anything, honestly. I don't get sucked into the rabbit hole. I am so focused every day on putting out such a quality product on public radio. Honestly, I know that's not – I told you guys before, it's hard when, you know, you are producing daily content, and I was producing something about arts education, and so I got really sucked into that, but – it's not nearly interesting.
Well,
enough
the
to
one
talk
that
about.
The one that I'll go back to the Chicago violence documentary in the BBC because I watched
that.
And there was one rapper who was from the West Side who was talking to the documentary crew, and he talked about. He said, "Okay," and I saw this on Facebook that you know, he's came up in Chicago, and there was a time everybody had a gun, right? But now it's double. Like, every shorty's got a gun. Every 10-year-old, every 12-year-old's got a gun. Every girl has a gun. It went from 22s and little guns that you'd put. Now everyone's got bullets that you could do 30 bullets a clip, right? And I thought it was interesting because there was a lot that played around, and it's also popped up again, about this idea of crates of guns. And that was the phrase that I kept hearing, and that was also played out in the comments. And it went to this idea that there is some conspiracy theories that say that there is some reason that people are supplying crates and crates of weapons to these areas, to the south and west sides, to the areas that the superintendent talks about. For and you know, I guess at the end of the day, the conspiracy theory's end is that it's meant for black people to kill each other. You know, that's the end of that conspiracy theory, which I'm not sure I, you know, that that the evidence suggests that. But I want to get back to the crates of guns, because commenters are like, I've seen these crates of guns. Or they talked about the train, the freight train robbery from last year where, you know, out of nowhere, a freight train was robbed and a bunch of guns were taken off of it. And you just and it goes to this idea that is there something, where are these guns coming from?
And where are they going to?
And
who's transporting
them? And so there's just that the BBC, I kind of went down the rabbit hole in that, saying, I mean, because we just have this we gloss over it.
They didn't really follow through.
No. This was just stuff that was really anecdotal from friends of mine that I trust that are on Facebook. They were like saying, I've seen this, or everybody knows this, or everybody, you know, someone who lives in Inglewood saying, this is what I know. And I just.
I think that's important that they're saying that, because watching it for me, I frankly kind of a gloss. I thought it was a rhetorical advice to be, you know, like hyperbole, like crates and crates, you know, just to say like there's so many.
No, these comments were about the idea of specific crates with guns in them, meaning that it wasn't just like they saw them and, you know, everybody had one. There's so many guns. There's so many crates of guns. It was this idea that there's some sort of supply coming in that is being dropped off with crates of guns. Pick whatever you want.
And everyone in that documentary had a gun too, right? Like at one point they're doing a music video in an abandoned house, and everyone, like one kid's got like a semi-automatic rifle.
And only a few of them disguise their faces, you know.
Now the commenters are coming in. 630 says, what about the cartels, the drug cartels? You know, you're protecting your trade, and maybe the drug cartel has something to do with it. Maybe that's not, you know, like I said, this is rabbit hole. This is conspiracy theories, and I don't have anything to back that up. But the concept being, that would make some sort of sense to me in the way that you're like, okay, well, you know, there is a drug trade there that needs to be protected. Someone is profiting from that drug trade beyond the kids that are slinging it, right?
Well, don't they want El Chapo up here for like?
Yeah, he's going to New York.
Yeah, my mom calls him El Chapo, and I remember one night. For her birthday, we were at some fancy restaurant downtown, and this was after a couple of drinks, and she's like, hey, you remember that guy who dug all those tunnels in Mexico? And we're like, oh, El Chapo? And she's like, yeah, El Chapo.
That's just a Midwestern taste.
She was like, yeah, like so-and-so, like one of my friends, she's like a distant relative of El Chapo. And we're like, what? You know someone who's related to El Chapo? She's like, yeah. And she didn't think anything of it. It was just like,
that's awesome.
Oh, you remember like Johnny down the street? Well, he's in New York right now. And it was so bizarre. And then I go into the bathroom, and I'm not joking, there's a guy who's snorting a line in the bathroom. And I was like,
what
is going on? Why is like cocaine the theme of the night? For me, for my mom's
the
birthday.
Klaus family, rolling.
All right.
There you go.
About Lynn Martin this weekend. So,
I don't know. The rabbit hole on that. The one rabbit hole that I didn't go down, which I really wanted to, I set aside because I wanted to, was Phyllis Schlafly.
Phyllis Schlafly died this week. That's my rabbit hole.
A longtime conservative who has, has both been... it's such an interesting dichotomy for this woman who has been outspoken for women, but also against women. And it's such a strange thing to think about, and how much, you know, space she had in the 70s and 80s to be able to sort of position and shape the way we see those issues today.
You know, I can't believe I didn't do Phyllis Schlafly.
Did
you talk to Carol Felsenthal? You know, literally wrote the book on her, and she had a really good, really super interesting article and take on it. And I don't want to interpret her view of it, but for me, I felt like, you know, because she was extremely accomplished, and the fact that like she had a very encouraging father, and her husband, they, you know, they said, came to him, they wanted him to run for office. He said, I don't want to, you know, I'll do it. And so it's like, you couldn't ever find these strains of oppression. And I almost felt like there was a little bit of like, when you find out all the politicians who are fighting against gay marriage and who are homophobic, that they're closeted. And I was like, it's this internal struggle of like, I don't know if that's a reach. That's just how I was sort of dissecting it, that she's all this accomplishment. She's just such an accomplished woman. And yet she took issue. And that's not to say, she's a misogynist.
I think it's interesting because the world has changed in a way that, you know, in 2016 there really aren't any Phyllis Schlafly's. And who are even fighting for the things she was fighting for. And you don't see it. I mean, maybe Ann Coulter is in that regard, but she doesn't really get into feminist issues.
You're saying there's nobody anti-feminist?
Yeah, there's nobody anti-feminist who's a woman who will come out and be the spokesperson for that movement. That was a movement.
Well, I would disagree with that a bit because of, you know, it was a few years ago, but when there was this big move, and I don't know, maybe people credit to Beyonce. She has the big feminist behind her. And there were all these young women, mm-hmm. actresses that right. were saying, and you can interpret it that this is either good or bad, but that are like, I'm not a feminist. Don't call me a feminist. The positive interpretation of that being like, of course I'm, you know, why would I even identify as one? Of course I'm one. But the negative being such that there is still the stereotype
Absolutely.
That you are man-hating. You know, everything.
Absolutely. You know. But I'm saying someone who was a spokesperson that would go on talk shows, that would be the voice of that movement, that anti-feminist movement, that there is no spokesperson. Name the person who represents that movement, a woman that would represent that movement today in 2016.
But what do you think they would be? What specific platform would they be rallying?
Let's just say, you know, I don't know what Phyllis Schlafly was rallying against
at the
ERA.
Time.
Yeah, she's
yeah. But I mean, yeah, even the ERA, equal rights, anything along the idea that, you know, that women are not should be paid the same, anything like that. You just don't have women who are representing the other side of that.
Until you watch very closely this presidential race and all the people, women too, who will say a woman should not run the country. Hmm. There are plenty that say that, and you see that, and. So I would say maybe they're not, they're of course not the spokespeople for the entire country, but
those
thoughts are out there.
I do not doubt that the thoughts are out there. They're definitely, but I don't know if it's an accepted, point of view to be represented in mainstream media.
Right.
You're not going to see anybody who's like, we've got Carrie Shepard, Hunter Klaus, and we've got Phyllis Schlafly. You know, like, it's just not, the 2016 has changed. It's decades later, and those ideas have almost become closeted once again. So
it's interesting, yeah, because we would think you would say the same thing about gay rights too, right? But you still do have many vocal people yeah. who are, mm-hmm. you know, and we still give them platforms. You know, I see what you're saying. It's an interesting thought. I will dig into the
yeah. See, I'd like to know who like the and I'm talking about a woman who would be representing that angle, the idea of an anti-feminist sort of movement in America.
Okay.
I don't know. 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up. Which story will be remembered in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years from this week? Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. Hunter Klaus, Carrie Shepard in studio. Hunter, a producer for WTTW Chicago Tonight, which can be seen Monday through Thursday, 7 to 8.
And also Friday. We have
Friday's Weekend. Is that yeah. considered Chicago Tonight?
Yeah. It's
huh. So, well, you learn something new yeah. every day. Carrie Shepard, a senior producer over at WBEZ, the NPR affiliate here in Chicago. All right, so we got one category left. Let's get to it. So we ask this question every week, our panelists. What story from this week will be remembered in history, whether it be 10 years, 50 years, 500 years from now? What story is the takeaway from this week? Why don't we start with you, Carrie?
Well, I think on, you know, it's not necessarily specific to this week, but it's this presidential election, as much as I started by saying I don't even want to talk about it, is historic in so many ways, right? The Trump part. The fact that Hillary Clinton being the first woman on a top ticket, but also I think for Chicagoans specifically, and I don't know if this is going to be across the nation. I think gun violence is going to be talked mm-hmm. about for a very long time. In the same way we reflect on other highlights of lowlights of Chicago history, I think it's really going to be pervasive. It's going to persist mm-hmm. for sure.
Absolutely.
500 years, I don't think anybody's going to be talking. I think we'll be robots. So that's my take on that.
All right. Hunter, what do you got?
I put the water and sewer tax, since it's a 40-year plan that may still be a plan. Don't know about that sixth year, but I think the broader issue of pensions, that's not something that's going to go away anytime soon.
And I mean, it's just one of the funds.
Yeah, it's the largest
one.
And it's got a like $18 billion unfunded liability that...
It does the same thing. What kills me about it is it's that same ramp. The ramp that Jim Edgar introduced in the 90s to the ramp that the Madigans and the Blagojeviches played with in the 2000s to what we just saw with Mayor Daley.
Yeah,
it's the same concept. And I don't know why we're just all like, the aldermen are like,
Yeah, it's like
I think we're just like you're saying, what is there left to do? I think it's just banging your head against the wall.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like,
people don't care. I think they do care.
It's like the end of like Dr. Strangelove where like, you know, Slim Pickens rides the nuke down and activates the doomsday machine. They're all like, oh, well, we've got to go to the bunkers, but let's build more bunkers than the Russians. And the Russians are like, well, we're going to build more bunkers than you. And then when we get out, we're going to like go after you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wonder, I mean, at this stage of the game, when we've had all of this rhetoric over the last 5 years now about pension reform, what's doable, what's not, funding pensions, how we're going to get out of this massive debt, to essentially just do governing by making the string longer, mm-hmm. you know, by saying, okay, well, this will give us a couple, we'll borrow here. We'll, you know, the ramp up, I mean, at the end, the amount of money that no one's talking about in 40 years time, that will be that the nut will be like, I don't know, like something like $2.1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gonna get there again. And then we're going to be in the same. My grandkids are going to be like, tonight on the news, how are they going to get past this $2.1 billion water deal? And we're going to be like, we were here 40 years ago talking about it. I feel like that's where we're at right now from decisions that were made quietly in the mid-90s, in early 90s. We're going to just change it up. We'll pay now, and then in 2050, there won't even be pensions in 2016. No one will care. It'll be a big party. Stuff shrimp cocktail.
So you think pensions will be talked about in 100 years,
500 years? I just wonder if, you know, there has to be, I mean, it's a political decision, obviously. The mayor has just put out a huge property tax, one of the biggest in city history. He can't then come back and go, all right, you know what? Water tax is going to be the biggest in city history right now because we're going to fix this because he's going to have to do that again on the other one and the other one and the other one. So I just feel like that's part of it, too.
Well, you're just talking, city level, too.
This is city.
Think about the state level, right?
My story that will be remembered from this week in 50, 100, 500 years, even though I don't know if it's a good thing, is the Apple 7 announcement. And the reason is because the wireless headphones is a huge, huge game changer. Not for good. I think the idea of the old earbuds, they're gone. That'll be something in the future. So in 50 years, we'll be like, well, it'll be jokes on the on the late night talk shows going, remember these?
Well, like the chargers now, too, like that Starbucks has and stuff. You know, you just literally put your phone on
the ground. Just one of those technologies that is, I mean, the earbuds are going to go the way of the big cell phones. Like, that's the next thing. So in 500 years, they're going to be making jokes about stuff we found. When they dig it up, they'll dig a capsule up, and there'll be earbuds in there. But the other thing, and we didn't even get into it because it's infuriating in a way, is that the way that technology just gets very vicious in the concept that this is cool, it's new, there's no headphone jacks, it's all wireless, and it's going to cost you $150 more.
Mm-hmm. Like,
they're talking about that Apple 7 being $900.
Whoa.
That iPhone is $900.
Like, which focus group was like, you know, the biggest problem with the iPhone? The tangled earbuds.
Yeah.
The
I'm sure that was an issue. And also, I don't think that they do that. I know I sound cynical here, but I don't think you're in any position where Apple is going, how can we improve this product? The question they're asking is, how can we make more money off this product?
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have these two little sized earrings that you put into your ears that you have to have a special case for. That'll be $39.99 at the Apple Store. And you will drop one because these things are as big as earrings. And you'll have to go back to the store because they don't sell one. You got to sell two. So it's $150 again. And they're going to make so much money off of us. And what we think to be disposable, these little earbuds, will no longer be disposable.
But you'll be able to play Super Mario on your phone and Pokemon Go.
Right. And Pokemon Go. I'll
be able to Bluetooth. I'm this close to be able to have people talk to me in my ear while I'm like I'm a news anchor.
As I walk around. Pokemon Go.
All right, Hunter Klaus, Carrie Shepherd, thanks so much for being here, you guys.
Yeah,
good job tonight. And thanks everyone who contributed. Yes, it's always fun. And thank you.